This is Kendall Mead of Mascot, and you're listening to 90.7 FM, WGXC, Accra.
Tom Rowe, live this morning with the WGXC Morning Show, and we've got a busy show for you today. The WGXC Congressional Report is coming up. We're also going to hear a report about the New York redistricting process, and Philip Grant has some local news. The Catskill Maker Syndicate have the better weather. It's cold out there. We'll keep you warm for the next hour on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
This is Stephen Merritt, and I apparently on WGXC Accra, which I think of as WGXC Hudson, but I don't know. I've never been to Accra.
Hey man, you got another hat in your truck? It's sunny out here. Oh no, I gave all my hats away. It seems like they were hurting my brow. Oh, darn. Can you run in there and get me another cup of coffee, please? Hey, man, you just finished your cup of coffee. Yeah, I know. I want one more, though. What are those guys talking about? I don't know. He said something about a hat. Oh, gosh. I wish I had a hat. Yeah, why don't you run in and get me a coffee, and I'll go get you a hat at the thrift store.
Excuse me.
Oh, man, I think those guys are going to get a thrift score, they said. Oh, they're going to get all those jazz records over there. Hey, why don't you give me a coffee? Give me extra motivation to go thrifting. Oh, that guy just said he was drifting across the street there at that coffee house. I don't know what to do. Hey, I think that guy said he's drifting. We might have to get out the boats. Oh, I don't know. Hey, I think that guy across the street at the coffee house says he's drifting. Drifting? He looks more like he's grifting. Ha ha, good one. Hey, those two guys across the street at the coffee house said that they're grifting or sifting. I couldn't make it out. Aw, dude, have another coffee. Hey, this is cool. They got brown napkins, so if you spill your coffee, nobody knows. Ha ha ha, good one. Hey, can you get a little more vanilla in my coffee? Yeah, I did get vanilla in your coffee, but they only had raspberry amaretto. No, I don't like that stuff. Hey, man, that guy just said he's into amaretto like my little sister. Ha, 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 yeah, that's a good one. Is your little sister like coffee? Nah, she's only 4. She has to have half a cup. Hey, I think those two guys across the street just made fun of your little sister. Oh, man, after I have all this coffee, I'm going to go mess them up. Oh, those guys had so much coffee over there. I think they're all messed up, if you know what I mean, in the pants area.
Battlefield Earth every Tuesday night from 9:30 to midnight.
Waif Farm respectfully and humbly acknowledges the past, present, and future Indigenous peoples on whose ancestral lands Waif Farm and WGXC operate and broadcast. The Mohicans name themselves the people of the waters that are never still following their arrival along the Great Ebb Tide River, also known as the Hudson. The Mohicans stewarded this land over many generations and in dynamic communication and interaction with diverse Indigenous peoples, including the Haudenosaunee Mohawk and the Munsee Lenape. Mohican descendants today live in communities in Ontario, Wisconsin, and Oklahoma. For more information on Mohican history and the contemporary community of the Stockbridge Munsee Band of Mohican Indians, please visit Mohican.com.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Upstate Films, where membership provides access to world-class cinema, first-run feature films, art house films, live music, and more. Plus, advance notice of close-up conversations with directors and actors and other special events at the Star Theater in Rhinebeck, the Orpheum in Socrates, and traveling around the Hudson Valley. Information at upstatefilms.org/support. That's upstatefilms.org.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Ellen Donovan of Medusa, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. Thank you for your support.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre, and Philip Grant up in Rensselaer County and I are bringing you the WGXC Congressional Report, full of stories about what the candidates and representatives from the New York 18th, 19th, 20th, and 21st congressional districts have been up to this past week. Go to WGXC.org in the WGXC newsroom for complete coverage of your congressional representative.
Nanny Conning in the New York Times reports that Representative Mark Molinaro's first year in Congress was historic. The House of Representatives only voted for 27 bills that became law. That is an average of one law every 2 weeks. Many of the 27 bills passed were not substantial, such as naming a facility after someone. The Democrats provided more votes than the Republican majority to approve the most important governing bills, from funding the government to prevent a shutdown to raising the debt ceiling to avert a default. The Republican majority in the House held 720 votes in all, with only 27 becoming law, and that is more voting and less lawmaking than at any other time in the last decade, according to the Bipartisan Policy Center. Last year, when Democrats had unified control of Congress, the House held 549 votes and passed 248 bills that were signed into law. The House did oust Republican serial liar George Santos, and they also sanctioned three Democrats, but they did not pass many laws. Read more about this story in the New York Times. Mid-Hudson News reports that the Newburgh District Office of Representative Pat Ryan was vandalized by activists demanding the Democrat call for a ceasefire in the war in Gaza. The words, "ceasefire now" and "war criminal" were painted on the windows of Ryan's office on Broadway in Newburgh. Ryan continued to defend his support of the war in a statement, and I quote, "War brings out the worst in humanity, making the urgent pursuit of peace both necessary and incredibly difficult to achieve," end quote. Ryan said he would support a ceasefire if certain benchmarks were reached first. But Ryan's demand before a ceasefire may not be realistic. The story says, and I quote, "The likelihood that a new Palestinian government could be quickly constituted to end the bloodshed and the new government would be able to negotiate a genuine two-state solution with Israel seems low," end quote. Several hundred people peacefully rallied in front of Ryan's office last month to convince him to support a ceasefire. Read more about this story at Mid-Hudson News.
Joshua Solomon reports for the Times Union that State Supreme Court Justice Christina L. Reba rejected on December 28th an attempt by Representative Elise Stefanik and the Republican Party to temporarily suspend a new state law allowing any registered voter in New York to cast their ballot early by mail. The Republicans argue that the law violates the Constitution and will now make their case to an appellate court in Albany. Democrats in the legislature passed, and Governor Kathy Hochul signed, a law allowing any registered voter to vote by mail. Before, voters needed an excuse to vote by mail, such as being away in the military. During the COVID-19 pandemic, the state allowed temporary voting by mail without any major problem. But Stefanik and the other Republicans say a constitutional amendment must be passed to allow voting by mail. The judge, though, ruled that the Republicans did not demonstrate they would face, and I quote, irreparable harm, end quote, under the new law. At the same time that they are challenging the issue in court, Stefanik said the New York Republicans have been pushing, and I quote, legal balloting harvesting, end quote, and encouraging its constituents to enroll to vote by mail to win the 2024 election. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Jack RP reports for New York State of Politics that New York's Independent Redistricting Commission met on December 28th, charged yet again with drawing congressional boundaries. Chair Ken Jenkins said, and I quote, "We'll meet as much as required to make sure the date is accomplished," end quote. This is the third attempt by the commission to construct congressional boundary lines. The commission has until February 28th to announce the new lines. The congressional map has changed several times since the 2020 census, as courts and the legislature have rejected maps from the commission and a special master appointed for the task. In 2020, New York congressional elections helped shift control of the House of Representatives from Democrats to Republicans, and the 2024 election is expected to be just as pivotal in New York. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics. And that wraps up the WGXC Daily News. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button.
This has been the WGXC Congressional Report, tracking the votes, statements, positions, and campaigns of the representatives and candidates for the 18th, 19th, 20th, and 21st congressional seats in New York. Go to WGXC.org for more information.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
If there is more voter participation, there will be better health care policies and therefore better health care.
American College of Physicians President Dr. Omar Atik says voting and health are directly connected. New College of Physicians research published in the Annals of Internal Medicine finds so much health care access is determined by politics that states where it's easier to vote are significantly healthier. Anti-vaccine candidates are racking up wins in state elections while childhood vaccination rates drop. In Louisiana, 29 candidates endorsed by Stand for Health Freedom opposed to mandatory vaccinations won in off-year elections last fall. Republican State Representative Kathy Edmondson says the government should not trump parental rights.
It's all about freedom. Mandates are not about freedom. Mandates are about restrictions. You can opt out. You have an exemption if you so choose.
The state has the third lowest child vaccination rate and may be low enough to hurt public health. At least six states are looking at making school board candidates declare their party affiliation on the ballot. Opponents say it's important not to politicize school finances or the hiring of staff, but supporters, including Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, say too often voters back candidates whose views they oppose.
So we want transparency. We want people to be able to do what they think is best and educating voters to the maximum degree.
A dozen states will implement laws this year banning so-called ghost guns. Democratic Colorado Governor Jared Polis says the firearms, often assembled at home or 3D printed without serial numbers, allow owners to evade background checks.
These pre-assembled, click-together, untraceable, deadly weapons are a very dangerous loophole. We are taking an important step to close that loophole.
Police say the number of ghost guns used in crimes is rising quickly. The U.S. had nearly 40 mass shootings last year, with more than 200 people killed. The mayors of Chicago, Denver, and New York say Texas Governor Greg Abbott has resumed what they call the inhumane and dangerous busing of migrants to their cities. Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson says families are arriving unannounced in the cold early morning hours and straining city resources.
Well, what we have is clearly an international and federal crisis that local governments are being asked to subsidize, and this is unsustainable.
New York City is receiving nearly 4,000 migrants a week. Mayor Eric Adams is telling bus companies to give advance notice of their arrival. The mayors want more federal migrant aid and faster work authorizations. New border policies combined with a foreign aid package are stuck in congressional negotiations. And year-end remarks by Supreme Court Chief Justice John Roberts focused on the promise and risks of artificial intelligence. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. A new report chronicles a brain drain of experienced professional election officials who, after dealing for months on end with false election fraud claims, intimidation, and burdensome new election integrity rules, have had enough. Pro-Democracy Group Issue 1 analyzed Western state data and news reports and found that 98% of Arizona voters will vote in precincts with new election officials since 2020, and that 12 of 15 counties have new officials. Colorado lost a combined 314 years of experience when election officials in 24 of 64 counties stepped down. Election officials cite an increasing workload, threats, and a frustration with activists. An Arizona County election official told Women's News site the 19th, "The reality is there are a lot of people who don't want to know the truth. They've continued for almost 2 years with the emails, going to public meetings, and heckling from the audience." In an interview with Issue 1, Nevada Secretary of State Francisco Aguilar said, "Nevada has lost more than half of our top county election officials since the 2020 election, and many more staff within election offices across the state. This has led to a critical loss of institutional knowledge and staffing shortages ahead of the 2024 presidential election." We have Issue 1's full report linked from AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. There are more than 8,000 known species of amphibians, newts, salamanders, big warty toads, and frogs of every color. These semi-aquatic critters provide food for birds, snakes, and fish, and they help humans by eating insects, including disease-spreading mosquitoes. But many amphibians are in trouble. According to the latest Global Amphibian Assessment, about 40% of species are considered globally threatened.
And I think it's very important for the public and for the community to understand that this is a very serious matter.
Gina Della Tonia of the Amphibian Survival Alliance says for decades, the biggest threats to amphibians have been habitat loss and disease. But now climate change has emerged as another major risk. Amphibians are especially vulnerable because they're cold-blooded.
So they are directly affected by changes in the external temperature, humidity.
And many live in specific microclimates, such as by a particular stream. So when conditions change, some are unable to migrate. As warming continues, the risks to amphibians are expected to grow. So it will be increasingly important to protect these vulnerable creatures. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Tuesday, January 2nd. Local early morning temperatures range from 19 degrees in Tannersville to 26 in Copaic. Regional average soil temperature is 36 degrees. Sub-freezing this morning, so wrap up if you head outside. If going in the car, make sure you have at least an emergency Mylar blanket in the safety kit. You do have a safety kit, don't you? We get a high of 39 at 2 p.m. Overnight, we dip back down to 26 degrees. Tomorrow will be partly cloudy. At 2 p.m., temperatures spike at 41 degrees. Overnight, temperatures fall to about 30, and Thursday morning, we can expect some pretty but unobstructive snowflakes. All that gets blown away by dark as temperatures rise to 39 degrees and wind gusts show up. Friday, a bit windy with a high of 33. Sunset today will be at 4:20 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 7:19 a.m. Looking way up, we see X-class flare chances are at 25%. Sunspot 35-36 will be raising the risks of geomagnetic disturbances all week, especially today, as a Hadouken, or a coronal mass ejection, as it's commonly known, that was initiated by the same sunspot, will come close to us today. If a flare goes off while it's here, we could see some pretty negative electrical effects, especially with satellites. Plasma winds will be average at 404 kilometers per second with an average density of 6 protons per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 4 megahertz till dark, then fair below 60 megahertz overnight. There are low chances of aurora this evening. The current sunspot number is 44, and this has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
Now to absorb some local color through the magic of AM radio.
The Book of Revelations tells us to watch for the 7 signs of evil.
Sign of evil number 4.
Continuing our sign of evil countdown, here's Vanessa Williams.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Malambo Jazzmakers on the radio at WGXC. Bahula Diffabing from 2023 there from the Malambo Jazzmakers on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM. It's 2024 now, and it's an election year. And in New York, there's all sorts of election issues being discussed. Governor Kathy Hochul vetoed campaign finance legislation that would have affected the state legislative races this year. And the Independent Redistricting Commission is again drawing the congressional lines for the elections this year. From the New York Public Interest Research Group, Blair Horner discusses these issues with WOOC's Mark Dunley.
24 New Year, we're talking with Blair Horner, Executive Director of NYPIRG, New York Public Interest Research Group. And there were a couple of interesting developments recently. We thought we'd talk to Blair about some involvement in campaign finance and some about the redistricting issue for congressional seats. But Blair, the Governor Hochul, actually vetoed the changes that the legislature had made to the upcoming campaign finance rules, which was something that the good government groups had, I guess, urged the governor to do. So what exactly did the governor do, and why was that important?
Well, you're right, Mark, and Happy New Year to you and your listeners. So the governor vetoed legislation that was cobbled together in secret and passed at the end of the 2023 session. Anytime anything like that happens, you sort of pay attention, because usually when things are being hammered together in secret and then moved at the end of session with very little public discussion, you know, there is a sort of a stench that sometimes can come up from that. In this case, this was a bill that was that would, if it had become law, would have made significant changes to the state's public financing system. And just as your listeners' backdrop, in 2020, a new law was passed that set up a voluntary system of public financing, similar to what New York City has, to allow candidates running for office to get public matching funds if they focused on raising money from small donors. And so the pass in 2020 went into effect the day after the 2022 election. And without any public hearings or any meaningful public discussion or complaint, this bill was cobbled together, as I mentioned, in both houses. And it would have increased, for example, the amount of donations that candidates would have to raise within a particular district if they're running for the Assembly or for the Senate. There's another provision that's different in the current law from New York City, which allows for bigger, more use of public resources in low-income districts. And again, they raised the monetary threshold in that section as well. So the sort of the basis of it was to make it more difficult, primarily for challengers, to qualify by raising the minimum threshold for the by the amount of money that would have to be raised within a district, or by the number of the amount of donors in a district for anyone to qualify for the program. So the secrecy in negotiation, the raising the thresholds, the allowance for matching, no matter what the size of the campaign contribution, all of those things we thought were negatives, and Governor Hochul agreed and vetoed the legislation.
Now, is there any indication the legislature will try to amend the law again, or this more likely to be, we try, we fail, we'll live with what the system says is supposed to happen?
Yeah, I mean, you would think that there would be another attempt. We're certainly on wartime footing for this. They're trying to change the system before it even happened, right? So there's no evidence that there's a problem. So that makes us nervous. But these kind of bills don't pass at the end of session unless the leadership wanted it to happen. And when both houses of the legislature want something to happen, then they'll probably want to push it again. And something like this could, be easily contained in the budget. Now, whether or not the governor agrees to it or anything like that, I mean, who knows, right? But the fact that they are, that they were proposing significant changes to the public finance system, the, newborn system that hasn't really done anything yet other than is an indication, I think, that there will be more efforts like this to come.
And of course, when you mentioned the possibility put in the budget, which technically is supposed to somewhat be adopted by April 1st, gives more opportunity for horse trading. So say if the governor's a little frustrated with the lack of progress on her affordable housing programs, that might be something that she could trade in exchange for campaign finance changes or something. Is there any indication at this point, the system hasn't kicked in yet, but is this leading to, more people deciding to run, for the state legislature, particularly, from more non-traditional, pool of candidates?
Yeah, I mean, this program is not without flaw. Let me just say that right away. I mean, instead of just, you know, expanding the New York City program, which is road tested to the entire state, this effort sort of came up with its own system, right? And so anytime you have a new system that's not road tested, there will be problems. So I don't think that there's an issue that people, you know, reasonable people couldn't look at this and say things need to be improved. But raising the minimum thresholds, of course, is a way to keep challengers, make it harder for challengers to get on the ballot. But your point before about that this allowing for public resources to match small donations makes it easier for people who don't have a network of wealthy donors or interest groups to run for office, I think is right. And I think that's what we want, right? I mean, one of the reasons you recreate a system of public financing, a voluntary system of public financing, is to give non-traditional candidates a chance to vote. That doesn't guarantee that they'll win or that they'll outspend their opponents, but at least they have a shot.
Now, one of the issues we had taught you a month or two ago was that the Court of Appeals, State Highest Courts, in a split decision, had decided that the so-called independent redistricting commission would be given another shot at redrawing the lines for Congress, which last time had been actually drawn by a lower court, and the Democrats, who had expected to pick up, you know, four or five seats, did quite poorly, and actually was a big factor in Congress being now controlled by the Republicans. The Independent Redistricting Commission did apparently recently meet, and it didn't seem, you know, at least from the media reports, that they were really thinking about wholesale changes that, you know, might do some tweaks here and there with what the court had previously ordered, but not quite the radical changes that the Democrats were looking at. How is that process going to work out at this point?
Well, you're right. I mean, the state's top court says that the so-called Independent Redistricting Commission could get another bite at the apple. So that's, they met this week. It was, by all indications, at least from the verbal presentation, I mean, the meeting itself was over in 2 minutes. I was surprised at how short it was. But after the meeting and the sort of the press scrum that was happening, the Republican Democratic leaders of the commission basically made it appear that they were going to try to come up with new a map that more or less matches the status quo. I mean, from the Republicans' perspective, they will challenge any wholesale changes, of course. The Democrats have an advantage in the sense they have supermajorities in both houses of the legislature and a Democratic governor. And so, you know, is there a way to thread the needle between their two interests? Maybe. On the other hand, if you're one of these Republicans who won by, you know, a razor-thin majority in 22 going into a presidential election, any changes to districts in Nassau County, the Hudson Valley, or Syracuse could make the difference. So I don't know how they're going to work it out. I mean, but their public statements, you're quite right, were that they were going to try to find some sort of kumbaya moment where both parties could agree. And I think the institutional interest was that they wanted the court at least to agree that the legislature, well, the independent commission, would have authority even if the court stepped in. So that sets precedent for the future. And that may be all the Democrats really wanted out of this, feeling their oats with a presidential at the top of the ticket that their voters will show up in 24, which they did not do in 2022. That's the reason why the Democrats could have had a majority in the House of Representatives and didn't.
Can the legislature actually then do major changes if the districting commission actually agrees on something?
And the way the state constitution process works, and we put that with air quotes because we don't think it does, but this independent redistricting commission gets two opportunities to advance maps of their own. And if they, and then the legislature has the final responsibility to approve, the legislature votes that down, then the legislature draws the lines, not the commission.
We're talking to Blair Horner, NYPIRG, NYPIRG.org, and this has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
And just to put a little bow on that discussion, how many times have, right now the year is 2024. the census is taken in 2020, and the congressional lines are drawn from that, and we are 4 years beyond that. And this is the, I don't know how many maps have been drawn and thrown out by judges or legislatures or what, but New York, get your act together. You're listening to the Moontide Chorus from the Natural Information Society on the radio at WGXC. There is a vinyl extravaganza next at 10 a.m. on the Ginger Radio Hour with Justin Maiman. DJ Petty Boom is live from Greene County at noon with the Vinyl Freedom Show. It's a day of vinyl on the radio at WGXC. 7 p.m. tonight, the Capital District Democratic Socialist Good Time Hour is on, too, live from Hudson. And then the Battlefield Earth Program is live from somewhere in Columbia County at 10 p.m. on the radio at WGXC.
You're losing, you're losing, you're losing, you're losing.
Quintron, and now let's active take us out with the WGXC Morning Show. Watching.